Well, hey friends, welcome to my Saturday video. Hey, today I want to ask you a question. What do you think of Donald Trump? Today I'm going to do something really different, kind of out of my ballpark in a way. I'm going to do a video on translating Trump for Europeans. Now, full disclosure, since the elections, I've been talking to several people from my nation of birth, the UK, or people in France who cannot understand why anybody would vote for Donald J. Trump. And what I want to do in this video, it's not so much defend Trump or tell you how great he is. I have my drawbacks on him as well. But I want to actually challenge you to look at him through a different lens. So why not come on a journey with me today? Hey, if you're here, I'd love to hear from you in the comments below. Drop me a comment, hit the subscribe button. Please keep those comments polite. Love and understanding would be appreciated. But I want to share just a quick few thoughts. I'm not sure if I should entitle this message Translating Trump or Pride, Prejudice and Trump. So, quick background on this. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Graham. I grew up in the UK. Family's originally from Wales, so I'm a Brit by birth. I lived there for the first 22 years of my life. I then lived in France for 20 years, and I'm now living in America, where I'm based here in New England, in the state of Massachusetts. So, to some degree, I've got a British, a French, and now an American lens on this. And here's my challenge to you today. Again, this is especially for my European friends, or perhaps for people who live in that kind of New York corridor, the New York Times readers, the people who'd watch MSNBC. I have friends here in the US who cannot conceive of how anybody, least of all a Christian, could vote for Mr. Trump. So again, my goal is to just give you another perspective, not to defend him in some way. Now, I want to be clear, I'm an American citizen now, so my choice was to vote for Trump. I'm not hiding that in any way. But I came to that decision with an open mind and an open, a realistic appraisal of his faults and failings. And what I've done in the last few days is I've tried to note down and noted down about 7 main objections that people seem to have to Trump. And I just want to tell you how you can look at those things a little differently. Let me set that up. Before we do this, let me give you 2 quick stories as well. Number one is actually, I don't know if anybody's ever read the book. I'd encourage you to read the book or see a movie, some of them good, some not so much, of Pride and Prejudice. You say, what's that got to do with Trump? Well, actually, everything. Pride and Prejudice is a kind of historical romantic novel written in the, I'm going to get myself in trouble now, written in, I believe, the late 1790s, so the 18th century. And it's basically the story of a young lady, Elizabeth, I believe her name is Elizabeth Bennet, you know, and finding the right person to marry is her main endeavor at that stage. It's basically the story of two suitors she meets. One of them, I believe, was called Wickham, and the other Darcy, Mr. Darcy. And of course, the first guy she meets is handsome, appealing, everything about him presents well, he's polite, he's endearing, he captures her heart, he's, you know, poor as a church mouse in a way, but has a backstory of how he's been a victim of the other guy who she meets, and everything about him is just wonderful and appealing. And then she meets this other guy who becomes a suitor called Darcy, and everything about him revolts her. He's arrogant, he's prideful, he seems to look down on others, he seems to have no time for anybody of a lower class than him. You know, everything about him just revolts her. And of course, as she goes through the journey of the book, she actually realizes that all of her preconceived, all of her received ideas about the first guy, Wickham, are completely wrong. He ends up being a complete and utter scoundrel, and nothing about him that she believed is actually true. And then she learns to see in the other guy, although some of those initial criticisms have some validity, he's actually a really good man. And it's the story of her own prejudice and her own pride and how she works through those things. You know, in a modern language, we could call that how she looks at these two men through a completely different lens. And here's my challenge to you. All of us look at the world, look at the people around us through a certain lens. Now, this is especially true of people we don't meet and people like politicians. And frankly, I don't think there's probably anybody on planet Earth, at least in the last 50 years, it has been more true of than Donald Trump. Everybody has an opinion about him. And most of us, by definition, we tend to think our opinions are well-formed. We tend to think our opinions are balanced or centrist, that we are not extremists. We tend to think that we come to our opinions based on good information. We don't, all of us tend to think we're not swayed by one side or another, and that our opinions are pretty well informed. And I want to challenge you today, and I challenge myself, and this is a challenge for people who like Trump or don't like him. That's not true of any of us. You know, we see with our eyes, but we perceive with our hearts. And all of us live in bubbles. All of us are influenced by others. All of us see through our own pride, our identity, and our own prejudices as well. And we tend to project upon others, on the canvas of others, the things we think we've seen about them. And then when we see things, you know, confirmation bias, it's called, when we see things in that person which confirm what we think we have believed, it reinforces that belief. And then we get around somebody else who sees a completely different movie and we can't understand it. Imagine right now if I turned this video into a split screen and you were seeing two of me, Graham on the left, Graham on the right, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. And some people, imagine a room of 100 people, one of them were watching the left movie and the other the right-hand movie. I tell you, that's what's going on so often with characters like Trump, or you can put many other people there, but it's especially true of somebody with a character like Trump. We end up watching completely different movies, and we watch them with a group of friends, with the media, with a circle of influence that end up reinforcing those biases. Now, I think that's just as true of Republicans or pro-Trump supporters as it is Democrats. My challenge, though, is to speak particularly to my European friends and say, if you live in the UK right now, if you watch something like the BBC, for instance, it is a near certainty that you have a lopsided, biased viewpoint on somebody like Trump. Let me tell you another story really quickly before I get into this. Earlier this year, I was in France, where I've lived for 20 years. I still own a home in France. My wife's French. Love being in France. I was in France in, I think it was February of this year. And I was in my home there on my own. I'd rented a car, so I had a vehicle. But one day I wanted to go to the city of Lyon, which is about two and a half hours away. And instead of driving all that way, 5 hours drive and then parking and all that, I decided to download a French ride sharing app. So if, you know, an app where if somebody else is driving and they have a spare seat, you pay them $5, $10, whatever, and you ride with them. Really great system. And it's a great way of meeting people. And I decided I'm going to do 5 hours of work and not have to park in Lyon, all this. So I got a ride into Lyon, did all the things I needed to do, got a ride back. On the way back, I had something like a 3 hour journey, and the lady who picked me up was a school teacher in France. I think she might have been a retired school teacher or a little bit older in age. And, you know, we got talking, and as soon as we got talking, she figured out, okay, I was American, I was living in the US. And she asked me a question. She said, if you don't want to go there, I completely understand. But she said, can you explain to me why anybody in America would vote for Trump? She said, I cannot fathom how there is one person in that whole nation who would vote for Trump. And we had a wonderful and respectful and really enlightening conversation. Where over the course of this conversation, she shared all of the things she thought about Trump. And I have to say, I mean, there were little bits, we both came to the conclusion, this was her conclusion, 90% of what she believed was completely untrue. It had no basis. She couldn't actually say, I've heard him say that, I've seen that. It was just sort of ideas based upon ideas, based upon ideas. At one stage, I challenged her and said, can you actually tell me anything Trump has done? And she thought for a while. She said, no, there's not one thing he's done. It's interesting. At one point in the conversation, she said, how can Americans, they voted for somebody, for such an amazing president as Obama, Barack Obama. How could they now vote, you know, in 2016 for somebody like Trump? And I challenged this wonderful lady who became a friend. I said, can you tell me anything good about Obama? Can you tell me one thing he did? Now, I think I know good things he did. He approved the plan to catch Osama bin Laden. So I can think of some good things Obama did. But she thought, and then she thought, and then she started laughing. She said, you're right. She said, the only thing I know about Obama is he's black and he speaks eloquently in English, which I don't even understand, her words. And, you know, she came to the conclusion that she decided one guy was good based on the color of his skin, not on the content of his character. And the other guy was bad when she actually didn't know anything about him. So my quick goal today, I've asked some of my friends to give me some of the main objections to Trump. I've written down about seven of these, and I want to blaze through them quickly. And as you'll see, I actually agree with some of them. Some of them I think are really unfair criticisms. Some of them I think there's some truth in, but the media tends to exaggerate this truth. And some of them, frankly, aren't even true. So I just want to run through seven things. And again, I want you to see that my goal is not to persuade you that Trump is a wonderful guy. Rather, that at times we're looking through we see through a lens darkly. We're looking through our own prejudices. We're looking through our own lens. We're looking through our experience. And I have to say this as a Brit, some of you Brits will know what I mean here. I'm trying to find a nice way of doing this. Let me say this. When I was younger, for about a year, I worked part-time as a car salesman, salesperson, car dealership. I used to arrange finance for cars in the UK in a car dealership. Donald Trump comes across as the car salesman. He looks like the cliche, at least for Brits, of everything pushy and insincere. But my point is, so often we're judging somebody through this very facile, shallow judgment. So let me run through seven things here. Again, if you disagree with some of these, I'd love to hear from you. The main objection I heard from my European friends is Trump has a terrible character. Now, do I agree with that? I have to say at times I do agree with that, but I don't think that's, again, the whole truth. I think anybody who's honest about Trump would say yes, at times him firing off tweets and, you know, just insulting people and all that. Do I wish he would do that? No, I do not wish he would do that. I'll be honest, I don't think he's the only politician to do that. I think he just does it in a certain way, in a very visible way. I'd also say that I think, you know, when I began to understand New Yorkers, and when I say New York, I don't mean people who earn $500,000 a year in Manhattan. I mean people who live in the boroughs of New York, in Brooklyn, in Staten Island, and people like that. When you actually begin to understand New Yorkers, I think I began to understand Trump and his character a little bit. There's a certain culture there which insults people very freely and easily, but actually doesn't mean a lot of malice by it. It's just this, you insult me and I get you back. And I actually think that is so often what Trump is doing. Trump is an attacker. When the media attack him, as they do relentlessly all the time, so often other politicians will think they need to reply in a perfect, wonderful way. And that's not Trump. He gives as good as he gets. Now, I don't defend that per se. The lens I would put on that is really interesting, though. I think at least, and I'm speaking as a Christian now in America, we've seen for the last probably about 40 years, the media relentlessly attack conservatives, and conservatives do nothing to defend themselves. If you'll think about it, when Donald Trump began running in 2015, probably the first major thing that put him on the map was the very first Republican debate. And the very first question asked in that Republican debate was by Megyn Kelly. And she turned to Trump on the stage, national TV, and she said how can you defend insulting women? You call women pigs and dogs and grade them and that. And of course, Trump interrupted her straight away and said, only Rosie McDonald. And of course, the whole room burst into laughter. And then Trump carried on and he said, the problem today is people are so politically correct. Everybody's afraid of saying anything. Now, I don't defend Trump and all of his comments, and I think at times he does cross a line. That's my opinion. I wish he'd learn to control those things. But I actually think what endears him to a lot of people and what makes a lot of people like him, you know, we've seen in Kamala Harris over the last few months, somebody who is so controlled, she will never say anything she really thinks. Somebody who can't go on a podcast and actually just be herself because she's terrified of people knowing what she really thinks. And Trump just lays it all out there. And does Trump have character issues in the way he expresses himself? Absolutely. I will go yes with you on that one. But I think for many people here in America, it's not such an issue because they're glad to see somebody who's actually real. They are what they are with their warts and all. And that they're not afraid constantly of what every person thinks about them. So that would be the other side to that one. Okay, moving through these quickly. Secondly, again, this is probably much more a European thing. I've heard Europeans say Trump will leave NATO. He will destroy NATO. I think this is completely baseless and fallacious. I think what Trump did when Trump was in power the first time, he went to all of the countries in NATO. And again, quick refresher if you don't know what NATO is. NATO is an alliance of countries, North American treaty organization, where every country covenants gives its word that it will spend 2% of its GDP, gross domestic product, on defense. And what Trump did, Trump went. Now, if you're a Brit like I am, we're good. The Brits spend more than 2%. Do you know hardly any other European nation does? France does not. France is the 7th economical power in the world. Germany is the 4th economical power. Germany has often spent less than 1%. And Trump's problem with NATO is he would go to Germany, one of the richest countries in the world, where your average German gets 6 or 7 weeks of vacation, whereas your average American would get 2 weeks of vacation. And Trump would say, pony up. He'd say, if you want us to defend you, you want us to have our bases here, our missiles here. Trump went to Germany in 2017 and said, why are you buying all of your oil and gas from Russia, who's your enemy? Why? And you're sending all your money there and you're not keeping your commitments. And I think there's something you need to understand about Trump. Trump is not, he tends to go into any negotiation with the big, the threat, as it were, the big picture idea, and then negotiate. It's like he fixes a point and then negotiates back. So I don't actually think there's any possibility whatsoever of Trump or America pulling out of NATO. Rather, Trump, and frankly, most of America, wants the other countries to keep the commitment and not expect America to police the nation and protect them for free. And I don't think that's actually an unfair point of view. Okay. Point number three, Ukraine. If Trump takes power, he will negotiate with Putin and give them a whole swathe of land to bring peace in Ukraine. Frankly, with this one, I don't know, but I want to challenge you, neither do you. And let's just think about this for a moment. I understand the British point of view in this, be very similar to the French point of view. You know, from the UK, the only message you will hear is a message that goes like this. Putin's a very, very bad guy. He's invaded a neighboring country, wants to take massive portions of land with violence and force. This is wrong and we should defend them. Now, do I agree with those truths? Yes, I do. I agree with everything Boris Johnson and all of the other succeeding prime ministers, is it four now, have proposed in the last few years. But I just don't think it's the whole truth. Here's what I think Trump is actually saying. Trump is saying this, that there is a good possibility that Ukraine goes nowhere, that we spend the next 4, 5, 10 years spending billions of dollars in weapons to send to Ukraine. But more importantly, we spend the next few years in some First World War stalemate situation where every day there are young Ukrainians and young Russians dying. At the moment, the average age for conscription, not volunteer, conscription in Ukraine is, I think it's 53. Those are the people they're sending to put into the trenches right now. And what Trump is saying is nearly every war actually does end with a negotiation. That's just the reality of it. We may not like that, but that is the reality of it. And what Trump is saying is we'd be better going to Russia from a position of strength and saying, let's negotiate a good deal here. I think what Trump would also say, and many Americans would agree, is, you know, from a European perspective, we would say, great, Ukraine can join NATO. It's a free and sovereign nation. It can join NATO if it would wish to. Yeah, I understand that point of view. I think what Trump would say, and I think many Americans would actually think through and agree with, is, are we really sure that the Russians are not wrong to have a problem when NATO puts missiles, nuclear missiles, right on its border? I mean, let me give you an example. In the 1960s, when the Soviet Union put nuclear missiles in Cuba, forgive me, I don't know how many miles Cuba is from Miami, but it's really not far. You know, it's just a matter of a very few miles. The United States didn't go, oh, Cuba's a sovereign nation. You can do whatever you want. We were like, no, you will not put missiles there. So I think there's a whole other side to that story that is very reasonable, that's equally valid. I think what Trump would also say as well, and I don't think we're having this discussion in the UK, is it is an incredibly dangerous situation. You know, most wars have actually been started by accident and we kind of escalate into a bigger thing or another. And here are we in America with, you know, really the world's superpower. It's how easy would it be to enter into a nuclear war with Russia, and how terrible would that be? And there are people, including my friends in the UK, who want to give Ukraine our very best missiles and literally would allow Ukraine to fire them into Russia. Now, I understand that point of view, but would Russia then be wrong when it starts attacking? You know, if the Brits give missiles to Ukraine and Ukraine hits Moscow with them, can Moscow hit London? And where do we go with that? And what Trump is saying is the greatest global warming challenge in the world is actually nuclear war. And we should be very, very careful. I think the last thing Trump would be saying as well is you don't just talk to the people you agree with. You talk to your enemies. I actually think Trump has a real truth here that many people don't get. There's something that happens when you get in a room with somebody and you stop insulting them. Now, people want to criticize Trump because he doesn't insult Putin. Here's what I think I've learned about Trump, and I think Trump's right. I think when Trump went to meet Kim Jong-un of North Korea, when he actually shook his hand and said, I'm going to talk to you like an adult, things de-escalated. And I think Trump knows if he can get in a room with Putin and Zelensky and actually talk and listen, you will get a better outcome. And that simply insulting people isn't always the best policy. Now, again, I'm just trying to share what I think his perspective would be on that. Boom. Okay, objection number four. Trump is dangerous because he attacks the media. Again, I understand this from a point of view, but I think we've evolved into this place where we've made the media into something they are not. Now, you're right, Trump attacks the media. Trump so often calls the media the enemy of the people. But can I humbly suggest to you, he's sort of got a point. And the media, in one way, the media want the freedom to situate themselves as if they are unbiased umpires of truth. Like, imagine if you're watching Wimbledon. And they probably have computers these days, but in the old days, you've got the umpire sitting on the, you know, on the raised little platform, calling balls and strikes and in and out, and they're completely impartial and they're not for this player. That is not the reality. And I think Trump is not wrong for attacking the media and calling them out. And I would suggest to you, you know, people sent me some quotes of some of the terrible things Trump has said in the last few weeks. Can I tell you, every single quote people sent me was untrue? Yeah. Okay, I'm recording this on a Saturday, the Saturday after the elections. The week before, there was a massive story in the UK about how Trump had said Liz Cheney, the daughter of Dick Cheney, should be sent on a hill and have 9 people shoot her in the face. And there was about three or four days, like three or four media cycles of how terrible it was that Trump thinks his political enemies should be shot by a firing squad. And that was the main story here in the US for several days. Can I suggest to you, can I promise you that is completely untrue? The day before that story came out, I was in Ireland and I actually heard the entire interview for an hour. Here's what Trump actually said. Trump said he was talking about Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney, how they kept, you know, encouraging wars and the US to get involved in wars. And what Trump said is you tend to look at a war differently when you were the one on the hill with a gun with the enemy shooting at you. Trump said you tend to look at wars differently when you sent your sons and your daughters to war and they are on the hill with the enemy shooting at you. And what Trump said in that interview is if Liz Cheney, the daughter of Dick Cheney, if she was the one on the hill with the enemy shooting at her in the face, she might, you know, look at some of these things a little differently. He wasn't saying shoot her. He was simply saying that when we have skin in the game, we look at these things a little different. I think that's a very fair comment. And again, I could go on and on. Somebody made the comment here, and I'll come to that in a moment. Let me come. Objection number five, Trump is racist. Again, I would challenge any of you. Can you actually give me a quote or a basis on which to say that? Joe Biden famously said this, and the media repeat this one without sans cesse, we'd say in French, without ending, that Trump spoke about the riots in, I think, 2016 or 17 in Charlottesville, where there were, you know, protesters and then neo-Nazis marching. And this has been repeated thousands of times in the US. Kamala Harris said this, Joe Biden said this. They've said that Trump has said there are good people on both sides, the peace protesters and the Nazis, and there are good people on both sides. But anybody, come on, Christians, be a Berean if we love truth. If you actually watch Trump's whole, watch the clip for 5 minutes, Trump is saying nothing of the kind. What Trump is actually saying is there are two groups of people, one who want to tear down the statues of anybody who was ever, you know, kept slaves, like George Washington did, Benjamin Franklin did, whatever, and other people who think we should leave our historical monuments in place, even if they weren't perfect men. And Trump is saying there's two sides to an argument, and there are good people on both sides of that argument. That is exactly what he says. And I promise you, if you would take a look, you will see that. So there are Is Trump racist? I don't see anything that actually, I've never seen anything whatsoever that would indicate that to me. Maybe you have. I have never seen that. Nearly done here. Let me do two more. Number six was election denial. Trump denied that he lost the elections. Again, this is a complicated one, but you see, I would suggest to you this. I think you can make a very, very, very legitimate case that the 2020 elections were not fair elections, that they didn't qualify as being, valid in many, many ways. Now, I think there were many areas in which Trump exaggerated there. I don't think he reacted well. I have been very critical of the way he reacted there, but I do think he had some basis in challenging those elections. Let me give you just one example, and I can probably mention about five. I don't think anybody, let me give you several facts. Nobody can actually argue with this one. I've never heard anybody argue with this one anyway. You know, about a week before, 1 to 2 weeks before the 2020 elections, all of this story blew up about the Hunter Biden laptop. Now, there have been independent studies that said if that story had come out and had gone national, well over, I think it's something like 47% of the voters in America would have been willing to change their mind over that story. And when that story came out, a lot of the media, but also social media like Twitter, literally banned anybody mentioning that story. Twitter literally shut down the account of the New York Post because they put that story out there. And it's come out subsequently that literally the FBI used government powers, taxpayers' money, to contact media outlets and say to them, this story is not true, do not promote this story. About 2 months ago, Mark Zuckerberg, the owner of Meta, of Facebook and Instagram, came out publicly in a letter and said, "This is true. We were told by the FBI not to allow anybody to see this story." And he said, "We were wrong. It affected the election." And, you know, that was government interference in election. Now, what would have happened? I don't know. You know, the bottom line is, with the elections, Trump did hand over power. I don't think he did it in a very gracious manner. I think I'm not happy about everything that happened in that thing. But I don't think that story is as black or as white as people often pretend it is. Somebody's asked me as well, what about the January 6th, the protests in the Capitol building? Well, you see, I would say this. I remember watching that on my TV in my office here. I was horrified. I was disgusted when I watched that. Now, my personal opinion is that anybody who committed any violent act, violent against property, violence against police or security or against anybody whatsoever, should face the full consequence of the law. Now, I don't think they should be punished more than anybody who was violent during the Black Lives Matter protest or the Seattle protest, whatever. But we are a nation of laws, and anybody who broke the law that day should be punished by the law. They shouldn't be politically pursued in that way, but they should be punished. I have no problem about that. I don't personally see, I think Trump could have done a better job of dissuading people to do that. I personally wish Trump would have come out the very second that happened and made this massive call for people to go home. He did that, but he waited about an hour to do that. Now, I'm not happy about that, but to be clear, I do not think Trump incited people to that violence. So that would be my take on that. And again, I'm trying to just give a lens on how people see Trump here. Let me give you the last one as well. People have said Trump is a threat to democracy. In some ways, I've touched on this on the last point, but you know, Trump, somebody made the comment to me, Trump threatens to use the legal system against his enemies. I think there's a little bit of truth in that. I think in the heat of campaigns, you know, back in 2016, I think Trump, I'm not sure if Trump ever said this, but people would be shouting about Hillary Clinton, lock her up. And I think in those kind of contexts, yeah, Trump, in a kind of flippant off, yeah, lock her up or whatever. And I think, yeah, Trump has probably said those things which are not good. Let me give you two other facts that are connected with them. Firstly, though, when he was in power, he never once did that. So maybe in a campaign, you know, in the moment and people are shouting, oh, lock up the other candidate, he's like, yeah, lock her up, put her in the Tower of London or whatever. The point I would make to you is he never did that. When he was in control of the government, he never used the power of the government against anybody. Here's the main rather funny thing, in a way, though, I think people are missing. When Joe Biden was in power, he did use the power of the government against Trump. And especially this year, we have seen court case after court case. For instance, the court case when Trump was found guilty, the only one he's been found guilty of, in New York. Okay, Trump had to sit in a courtroom for nearly 2 months every day while the American elections were taking place. And again, I challenge you, my friends, check that out if you disagree. I don't think there's anybody, including any Democrats, who really can defend that court case. That court case, at best, was over an accounting error. Trump took his own money to pay off a porn star. Horrible, sordid, disgusting, if you will, story, but it was his money he paid to somebody, and he classified it in his accounts as some kind of personal expense. And the court case was saying, because he was running for president, that it should have been classified as some contribution to his campaign. That is the entirety of that story. Not one person has ever been prosecuted for anything like that. It's honestly, it's a little bit of a joke, that thing. And it is a near certainty that when that court case gets passed up and appealed, it will be struck down. Now, my point to you is the Democrats have used the power of the judiciary, the law that should be independent of any political influence, to go after their enemies. That is not a good thing. So I think we don't want anybody, Republican or Democrat, using the power of the law to threaten anybody. But at the moment, Trump is the victim of that, not the perpetrator of that. Boom. So let me end this here, but longer video than I meant to make. But what do we do now? Well, Trump has won. Now, again, I'll be honest with you. I'm a conservative. I'm a Christian. For me, things like abortion would take the precedent over any decision about the economy, things like the kind of woke agenda and some of the revolting things that are being pushed on children in high schools in America. They would be at the top of my priority list. But I think Trump has won an outstanding victory here. Again, I want to be clear. My choice was to vote for him, but I don't think he's a perfect candidate. And I think he needs people around him who love God and who love the truth, who can be honest with him about his faults and failings. I think as Christians, we should pray for him. But I think we should be willing to be challenged on our preconceived ideas. And if we only ever put on the lens of our tribe. You know, I watch some political podcasts in the UK. One of them, it seems to be the top one at the moment, is, something like It's All About Politics. Alistair Campbell, Rory Stewart. They started a US version with Anthony Scaramucci and Katie Couric of the BBC. It's interesting, though. Here you've got a political show, probably the top podcast, a political show in the US. And all four of the presenters hate Trump. All four of them hardly ever say anything positive about him. And here's my challenge to you. It's easy to straw man an argument. It's easy to look at your political enemies and turn them into a caricature, to find the weakest parts of their presentation, their argument, and to draw a caricature of them. And I'll be honest, I could do that all day long about Donald Trump. My challenge to you is this. Learn to strongman your opponent. Learn to look at the opposite party. I try to do this with the Democrats. Learn to look at the opposite party and make the strongest case. Learn to look at them with good faith and think they're actually good people trying to do the right thing, even if I disagree with them. And I think if you'll do that through Trump, you'll see an imperfect, a really imperfect guy, but somebody who loves his country, loves his family, wants the best. And I think our mission should be to hold him up and pray for him rather than constantly lie. I think something happens in the character of a nation or even the character of a person when we simply end up telling lies about somebody we don't like. Boom. Hope that's been a help to some of you. I'm kind of loath to say that, but drop me a comment. I really love to hear your thoughts. And as long as they're polite, I promise I'll get back to you on those. Anybody being rude, I'll just whatever, ignore you. But hey, go well and pray for the peace of Jerusalem. God bless you.